Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd on the Double with the Double S Express.
Good evening, everybody. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd for lucky show number 13 here on the Double with the Double S Express. What's going on, Sean?
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the show. Should be another exciting show. We have two great guests coming on. Of course, baseball packed. And, of course, talking about the training camp as well for football.
Speaking of football, we had the Hall of Fame weekend in the NFL, the first preseason game underway, the Hall of Fame inductions. Football is back.
Yeah, you know, of course, every year around this time, and you know, everybody takes a big, deep breath and a sigh of relief that football season is here, and that seemed to be the sentiment in social networking on Twitter yesterday, is that, hey, it didn't matter just as long as football was back. And, of course, a couple of days ago, there was the enshrinement of some great football Hall of Famers. And, you know, last night was a pretty decent game. I mean, it was 24-20. Dallas Cowboys won. You know, kudos out to them. And, you know, hey, football season's here.
We'll be talking a lot of football with our second guest here later in the hour. And baseball is big all over cyberspace right now with penalties coming down from Major League Baseball and performance-enhancing drugs.
Yes, you know, of course, as everybody well knows, and if you don't know by now, there are some penalties that have come out as far as the performance enhancement drugs by one Anthony Bosch, who seems to be behind everything. And, of course, the main player that is at the forefront right now is Alex Rodriguez. And, of course, Alex Rodriguez has had a couple of run-ins with this with steroids. Of course, the first time he wasn't he wasn't charged with anything, but now this go-around, Bud Selig has really put the hammer down on him, Mr. Wally.
Rodriguez facing a suspension through the 2014 Major League Baseball season. He is definitely appealing and can play through his appeal process.
Yeah, and as we speak, you know, this is something that I really can't figure out right now, Mr. Wally. Is the whole the laws and the guidelines that go into the suspension. So Alex Rodriguez is suspended. Okay, so you think that he isn't playing. Wrong. He's playing tonight, and he's playing against the Chicago White Sox as we speak. Having a chance to take a look at this this spectacle, of course, in Chicago, they booed him tremendously. And, you know, for me personally, I feel that they should. And I'm trying to figure out how somebody who's been who is at the forefront of something big can actually have the chance to go out and play. And why is he playing? That's the question that you have to ask yourself and ask Alex. Alex, why are you playing? Because from what I've been hearing in the interviews and seeing in the interviews, you haven't come out forthright like your other buddies, like Ryan Braun and Rafael Palmeiro and, you know, Jose Canseco, the whole nine that said that they haven't done it. You haven't come out and done that. What you've done is you've kind of thumbed your nose at the whole system, and basically what you're saying is you're above the law. I have a problem with that, Mr. Wally. I have a big problem with that because, Alex Rodriguez, it is not about you. All this time you have thought that it was about you. The reason why you got two $250 million contracts from two teams. You stole from the Texas Rangers. You stole from the New York Yankees. And now you want us to have self-pity on you and say that there's nobody else that's going to fight in your corner. Guess what, Alex? You have burned the bridges, buddy. You've burned them. And what makes it even worse, Sean Wally, is this. Joe Girardi, one of the great baseball players to play the game, now is actually playing dumb. He's saying that, hey, I'm going to put him into the lineup. He's a part of the team. You know, as far as we know, you know, he's just going to play. And it's just going to be normal. Well, any organization that has a spectacle knows that you're far from normal. Ask Tim Tebow when he played for the Denver Broncos and the New York Jets. Whenever you have somebody that's a spectacle, nothing is ever normal. So for the life of me, when you have Cashman, your general manager, that really it really looks like the Yankees do not want Alex Rodriguez in the organization. So when you see Cashman that's actually taking this stance, you have Major League Baseball and Bud Selig taking this stance, why would you have a manager for the New York Yankees come out and play dumb? It is just beyond me. I don't get it.
Well, Alex has admitted that he used some type of performance-enhancing drugs while with the Texas Rangers, and he has said that that was it, 2001 to 2003. Whether that's the truth or not, we don't know. And what's interesting is everybody else has received 50-game suspensions with the exception of Ryan Braun, who got 65. They've all accepted, even Bartolo Colon down there in Oakland and Jesus Montero in the Mariners organization. They have all accepted. And now Rodriguez is fighting this, and the only reason is money.
$100 million is exactly what we're talking about here. And so what he's going to do is he is going to take the forefront, whether it's on his performance on the field or just him being in the limelight for the next couple of months as far as arbitrations are concerned, as far as court proceedings are concerned. Alex only cares about Alex. Alex will not fess up and say, hey, I was wrong, and this is what I did. And, you know, for whatever it's worth, you know, I'm going to try to make myself better. What he's doing, looking at the interviews that I've seen on TV, he is thumbing his nose at the whole process because he believes that he is lawyered up enough that he can beat the system. And that is wrong.
From lying, cheating, and stealing, we turn to a guy that, as far as we all know, never did any of that. A big weekend coming up here in Seattle at Safeco Field, as Ken Griffey Jr. is to be enshrined in the Seattle Mariners Hall of Fame. Just a phenomenal 22 years in baseball, Griffey breaking a lot of records, just a great player in every aspect of the game.
Yeah, and it is. It's an exciting time for Ken Griffey. Of course, like you're saying, one of the good guys playing in baseball. And, of course, you know, we have a lot of good guys on our show. And so, you know, I would love to have Ken Griffey on there. You're talking about a young man, 630 home runs in his career, 1,836 RBIs, 10 Gold Glove Awards. The list goes on. And, you know, kudos to Ken Griffey Jr.
1997 MVP award winner, hit 304 for the season, a mere 56 home runs, 147 RBIs. Just monstrous numbers for Griffey in 97.
Yeah, you know, there's so many highlights that Ken Griffey has brought to all Major League Baseball fans. And, of course, if you're a Seattle Mariners fan, who could forget 1995 against the New York Yankees? He's rounding, third base after an Edgar Martinez base hit to bring it home. I mean, you know, those types of things are the things that you remember. And, you know, I know as a kid growing up, that was something that was very exciting for me to watch Ken Griffey Jr. play.
And you talk about 95, and who can forget the spring training joke Griffey played on then-manager Lou Piniella down in Arizona. Griffey was taking batting practice from an up-and-coming Mariner prospect who is still in the majors to this day, Rafael Soriano. And after about four pitches that Griffey could not touch, Lou bet him a steak dinner he couldn't hit the next couple, and he sure enough didn't. And do you remember what Griffey did to pay Lou his steak dinner, Sean?
Oh, my goodness. I believe it's probably one of the biggest Holstein cows that you could ever think of that was in Sweet Lou's office the next day. And so, man, I mean, those are funny times, thinking back to the Seattle Mariner crew and you know, how they, you know, gelled as a team. And, you know, speaking of that, as we talked about Alex Rodriguez, he was a part of that. You know, and so, you know, looking back on those fond memories. But, yeah, Ken Griffey, definitely a jokester in his day.
After his trade to the Cincinnati Reds, it wasn't until 2007 Griffey returned to Seattle with those Reds. And in a pregame ceremony, a choked-up Griffey said, quote, "I didn't realize how much I miss being in Seattle."
Yeah, you know, and that's, you know, that's the sentiment that happens with a lot of Major League Baseball players. I mean, Ken Griffey felt like, you know, at some point he wanted to go and play where his dad played, and we all get that, and we understand that. And, you know, he received a huge, huge homecoming welcome when he came back to Seattle. You know, and again, a lot of players preceded him as far as leaving and believing that, you know, the grass was greener in the bigger markets. But I truly believe that if that nucleus of players would have stuck around, Tino Martinez including, that the Mariners would have definitely had a run at not only winning the pennant, but winning the World Series.
Yeah, it's a shame they didn't stick together. And you think back, and it's like, how did they not go farther or get to the playoffs more often? You know, they had that run in 95, they won the division in 97, and then nothing else until the 2001 team tied the record with 116 wins.
Yeah, you know, and of course, the 116 win season, that was Ichiro Suzuki was a part of that. And, you know, it was, you know, those are great times as far as Seattle Mariners baseball clubs. And so, you know, all of that's a testament to what we're talking about, the tribute to Ken Griffey Jr. And so definitely paving the way for some solid baseball being played in Seattle.
You know, I had to laugh watching a special on Griffey that Root Sports put together over the weekend. A guy down in your neck of the woods with the Oakland A's, Dave Stewart, was quoted as saying that he gave Griffey Jr. his first two hits, and he couldn't get Griffey Sr. out, and he sure couldn't get Jr. out either.
Yeah, you know, you're talking about Dave Stewart, and, you know, one of the most feared closers in the game for the Oakland A's. And, you know, yeah, you know, it seemed like he could get anybody out, but for some reason, you know, Ken Griffey Sr., Ken Griffey Jr. had his number.
So mentioning the Oakland A's, the A's still in first place in the West. How are things looking down there at the O.co?
Well, you know, the A's, oh, man, they were nicked up a little bit in the series battle, or the AL West battle with the Texas Rangers. And right now the Oakland A's are 2.5 games up in the AL West. You know, Texas is definitely heated up. You know, you have Seattle making a move about 12 games out, moving ahead of Anaheim. But in Oakland, you know, there's a little bit of nervousness. Of course, you have some of the bats that aren't actually clicking right now. Pitching is a little shaky as well. But, you know, there's a lot of baseball left. And, you know, believing that the Oakland A's can, you know, keep things going. But it's not looking good right now, Mr. Wally.
And up here in the Pacific Northwest, the Mariners, man, the one team this year that seems to have their number is definitely the Boston Red Sox, which a lot of teams can say that, as Boston is tearing up the AL East. And Seattle went back to Boston for a 3-game series and got swept. They even had a 7-2 lead in the ninth inning and somehow blew it, lost 8-7. Then the Mariners move to Baltimore, and they end up winning that series 2-1.
Yeah, you know, of course, Boston, like you were saying, definitely had Seattle's number. That game right there, where Seattle lost, where they were up 5 runs in the ninth and wound up losing the game with the Red Sox scoring 6 runs, I mean, that almost was, I believe, is a backbreaker for the season. You know, and, you know, for whatever reason, come this time of the year, it looks like Seattle just kind of unfolds a little bit. But, you know, there is a little bit of optimism. These guys are still around 6 games under 500, and they have a chance to do some great things. But right now, I believe that this is Oakland's year.
And you mentioned that Oakland and Texas just battled. Texas, of course, taking a hit with Nelson Cruz being suspended for PEDs.
Yeah, you know, and you know, I was wondering if Bartolo Colon actually served enough on his suspension. And, of course, Bud Selig said, yeah, that he did, you know, which was good news for Oakland A's fans. You know, but you never want one of these guys to, you know, to be suspended or fallen by the wayside unless there's just reward. And, you know, like you said earlier, if it fits, then go ahead and serve your time. And so that's what's being done, you know, in Texas and other ball clubs. And so, you know, just look to, you know, make things better as with your ball club.
The Major League Baseball trading deadline came and went last week, midweek. Were you surprised at all at the lack of moves?
No, not at all. Not at all. And the reason why is because of what you're seeing that's going on right now. A lot of organization, a lot of owners did not know, you know, what their ball club was going to look like until these sanctions or these suspensions came down. So what you saw is you saw a lot of owners saying, hey, I'm going to hold on and see what's going to happen first. And, you know, try to make things work, you know, with their team. So, yeah, that wasn't surprising to me.
All right, it's time for big time guest number one here on the Double with the Double S Express. Let's go out to the phone lines and bring in our big time guest, and that is Major League Baseball scout Orsino Hall. Orsino, thank you for your time tonight.
You're welcome. Just checking in with you.
Hey, Orsino, welcome to the show on the Double with the Double S Express.
Well, thanks for having me.
All right. You know, you have a very unique name. Of course, my colleague here, Sean Wally, called you Orsino Hall, which I'm sure that's happened on numerous occasions. How many times do you think that's happened to where people hear your name and then they're expecting that one back in the day talk show host to appear?
Oh, it happens all the time. I don't even flinch anymore.
Yeah, I'm sure that happens quite a bit. But again, thanks for being on the show. And you know, there are some great things that you're doing, of course. And right now you're doing some scouting for a prominent Major League Baseball team right now that is taking the NL West by storm. And so tell me what that's like as far as the scouting process. How many of those players are actually yours right now? And, you know, what are you doing as far as the development still, you know, for that Dodger organization?
Well, right now, the players that I have drafted for the Dodgers, they're as high as AA right now. The top player that I've drafted is, actually, he's our top position player in the minor leagues. His name is Jock Peterson, and he's in Chattanooga AA. And I also have, I think he's number three prospect in our organization, the left-hand pitcher out of Stanford, Chris Reed, also. So those are my top two guys, one a position player and one a pitcher.
And so, yeah, so it definitely takes a keen eye as far as scouting is concerned. Of course, I've talked with a great friend of ours, Darryl Brown, who is also a scout, and he mentions the ongoing process as far as trying to get it right. One of the things that I found out about you, Orsino, is that how you pick pitchers is how you would actually face up to them. Is that correct?
Yes, that's what I do. You know, I mean, mechanics aside, you know, as far as I'm concerned, really the only thing that matters is when the ball leaves the pitcher's hand. Does it hit a bat or does it miss a bat? I mean, you hear a lot of scuttlebutt about, you know, his arm works, he has this, he has that. But a lot of pitchers that I faced, I played 12 minor league seasons, and I faced a lot of pitchers. And what I look at is when I sit behind the plate, I can just look at a pitcher and imagine myself in the box. And I said, you know, would this guy give me trouble? Would I have to bear down? Or, you know, is it a guy that I would really want to face? So, you know, a lot of times, you know, it just comes down to that for me. You know, it's more about the eye test.
Major League Baseball scout Orsino Hill joining us here on the Double with the Double S Express. And Orsino, what do you remember most? What are your fondest memories of your playing days?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, I have tons and tons of stories, but probably the thing that I remember most, and it's kind of odd because most people, you know, they always talk about when you know, I never played in the major leagues, but I played 12 minor league seasons and I was in a lot of big league camps and stuff like that. So I played with a lot of great players. And I think the thing that I remember the most is basically being in the lower minor leagues because, you know, just the things that you have to go through just to get through a season, you know, with all the bus rides and the bad diet and the small towns. I mean, those are times that you just never forget, and you still have friends, you know, from those times. And, you know, another impression left on me is when I played winter ball. I played down in Venezuela, and I played in Mexico. And let's just say it was pretty wide open down there. And, you know, it's a great eye-opening experience. Learned some of the language, you know, well enough to make sure that I could survive. And it was just a great time, just, you know, to see a different country and, you know, be immersed in a different culture. And, you know, those kind of times I'll never forget.
Orsino, you spent the 1992 season with the Tacoma Tigers, and we've got a lot of listeners in the Pacific Northwest. What do you remember about your days with the Tacoma Club?
Well, that was kind of an odd season because when we left spring training, we thought we were going to be a great club. You know, we were definitely having a championship aspiration, and that was one of the strangest teams I ever played on in my career because I would have bet the farm that team, you know, was going to do well, and we did the complete opposite. It was absolutely amazing how poorly we played, and it just didn't seem to matter. No matter what we did, it went the wrong way, and that was a very tough season. You know, it just seems like everything went against us. And, you know, as a hitter playing in Tacoma, it's a very tough ballpark to hit in. You know, it's very similar to Vancouver, where, you know, you're at sea level, so the ball doesn't carry that well. So, you know, once you get off to a slow start, it's real tough to hit in that ballpark. So any hitters that hit in that park, I tip my hat to them. But let's just say that was one of the strangest seasons I've ever played.
For those of you just tuning in, we have Orsino Hill as a guest on the Double with the Double S Express, and you're talking about Cheney Stadium, Orsino. You know, of course, I don't know if you know or not, but they've done a huge renovation, and so it's something similar to Raley Field out here in Sacramento. But I think if you go back and take a look at the stadium, you'll see that they did some nice renovations there.
Because, I mean, it wasn't a bad stadium. It was just, you know, an older stadium, had a lot of history and a lot of flavor. But I'm pretty sure it doesn't really matter how nice it looks. The ball still doesn't carry it. And that's coming from a hitter's perspective, you know. I mean, that's the number one thing that you think about as a hitter. How well does the ball carry?
Definitely. And so, shifting gears, I wanted to mention to our listeners here something that really grabbed my attention and, you know, tugged at me a little bit because, of course, being an African-American and getting a chance to, you know, see some of the struggles as far as our African-American players in Major League Baseball. When I mentioned the names Royce Clayton, Rodney McRae, Deshaun Watson, Barry Larkin, Dave Justice, Frank Thomas, Eric Davis, Daryl Strawberry, what do those names mean to you?
Well, that would be the program.
And so, yeah, so definitely mention, let our listeners know, talking about the program. Of course, we're talking about Harvard Park in South Central Los Angeles. And, of course, I believe Eric Davis and Daryl Strawberry were kind of the heads of it. But give our listeners the feel as far as what it was like to be a part of something so great as the program.
Well, basically we worked out in South Central Los Angeles, and, you know, Southern Cal and California in general, I can include Northern Cal in that also now that I scout the area. I mean, the bottom line, California has the best ball players in the country. I don't care what anybody says. And back in those days, baseball was at one of the all-time highs as far as the quality and the depth of talent. And we had a lot of ball players that were in the area, and we all knew each other, so we decided to work out together. And we worked out at this ballpark in the middle of South Central Los Angeles. And it was so unique because we would have the police department would be out there behind home plate watching us, along with the fire department. And on one side of the, like the first base side, you would have the Crips, which is the gang members. And then on the other side, on the third base side, you would have the Bloods. And we would have probably 50, 60 people out there watching us on a daily basis. We worked out Monday through Friday, took the weekends off. And a lot of times after those workouts, you know, we would go to the Lakers game because we're huge Laker fans. So every now and then we would mix in a Clipper game just because the Lakers were out of town. But it was one of those rare, you know, situations that will never be duplicated because now everything is so structured. So we knew at the time that we were doing something special. We would have three of the big steel barrel trash cans, and that was our L screen. And we didn't use anything, you know, nice or anything like that, because the way we looked at it was, hey, we just wanted to stay hungry. There were a lot of schools that wanted us to take our workout to their school. They would set up batting cages for us and L screens and whatever we needed. They would have batting practice pitchers out there because they wanted us to work out on their field, and we had to turn them down because, you know, that would not be what the essence of the program was. The program was to remember where you came from and, you know, try to, you know, hone your skills well enough that you didn't have to, you know, endure living in the inner city. So, you know, you wanted to work hard, but we never left the inner city because we wanted to make sure that, you know, we had that reminder every day.
Major League Baseball scout Orsino Hill, kind enough to join us here on the Double with the Double S Express. And Orsino, when you're out looking at prospects, and, you know, quite often they seem to be high school prospects. Of course, you look at college guys as well. But when you're looking at young men, do you look at talent alone, or do you also look into their background, check out their grades, and take a look at the whole package?
Well, nowadays, the way, you know, the scenario works is you have to know everything about the player. You know, you want to know what color underwear he wears because there's a lot on the line. You know, baseball is, you know, it's in a very upswing time for revenue, so there's a lot of money out there. And at the end of the day, the players, you know, you're investing money in players, so you want to know that you're investing in the right players. So one of the top things that, you know, we talk about as an organization is the makeup. The makeup always has to be a plus makeup. You know, at the end of the day, when, you know, times get tough and a kid is going through a tough time, it's going to be his makeup that helps him get through, you know, whatever adversity that's going to come his way, because we all know how difficult baseball is. You know, it's a very difficult game to play. You know, at the end of the day, it's a negative game. You're going to fail more than you succeed. So you have to have a great makeup to play this game. So obviously, I'm not coming to the games if you don't have a high skill level, if you can't play the game. So we know, you know, you're a good player, else we wouldn't be at the game. But we try to look for what we call separators, you know, what's going to separate this kid from another kid in Georgia or Texas or Florida. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of times it's the makeup. So with our organization, kids, they have to have good makeup. If you can't do it in the classroom, then, you know, it's real hard to believe that a kid is going to be able to make good decisions when he's out on his own and he has a little money in his pocket and nobody's watching him. So, you know, we take everything in consideration. We don't leave a stone unturned. You know, I don't care if you're a first rounder or if you're a 40th rounder. You know, we want you to come in and be a plus to the organization. So when we look at the big picture, when I scout a player, I know there are certain cities that some players just can't play in. And L.A. is one of those cities that everybody can't play in Los Angeles. Mm. You know, nothing against some of the other cities, but Los Angeles is a very unique city. Obviously, we understand the lifestyle, and a lot of times players get caught up in that. New York is another difficult city. Even San Francisco can be a tough city to play in, you know, because of, you know, all the things that are going on there. So, you know, we take everything in consideration, you know, because of all the stuff that is entailed in our city.
For those just tuning in, Orsino Hill, current Major League Baseball scout for the L.A. Dodgers. Orsino, I want to shift gears a little bit. Of course, as you know, there are some tremendous things going on in the news today as far as suspensions are concerned, as far as the brand of Major League Baseball. For you as a scout, how much of that, or how much does looking for, you know, behaviors of PEDs play a role, you know, as far as what types of players you bring into an organization or a camp?
Well, you know, you always got your ears open to, you know, allegations of any nature. But, you know, we live in the PED era, so, you know, those are very upfront and personal headlines. So, obviously, when you look at a player, you know, everybody's going to be suspicious of anybody doing something out of the ordinary. You know, if somebody has great numbers or, you know, is hitting the ball a long ways, you know, everybody's always going to be skeptical because that's just the times we live in. So, you know, you want to keep your ears and eyes open. You don't want to assume anything, you know, good or bad. And, you know, it just comes down to a gut feel a lot of times, you know, because sometimes it's hard to prove, you know, whatever they're taking because, you know, sometimes they take stuff over the counter and, you know, they can get big and strong also. So, you know, it's kind of a case-by-case basis, you know. But, you know, the way things are going now in Major League Baseball and, you know, the commissioner's office is trying to clean everything up, you know, now we have to get back to, you know, good athletes and guys that have high skill level.
Definitely. And of course, you know, great people such as yourself, you know, having that accountability, I'm sure that things are going to change, you know, slowly but surely in the years to come. So what are some of the things that you're doing these days? Are you doing things with the youth outside of coaching, or are there any fundraisers? Tell our listeners what's going on with you.
Well, basically, they keep us so busy scouting. I mean, I'm down here in Long Beach right now. I'm at one of the top national events right now called the Area Code Game. And there are teams from all over the country down here in Long Beach playing a four-day tournament. So, you know, as far as extra stuff, you know, we have, you know, basically scouting is almost a 12-month job. So
sure.
If I'm not at a ball game, I'm traveling around, you know, trying to do clinics. And, you know, I do a lot of inner-city clinics whenever I'm asked. And I just did one, you know, in up at Laney College before I came down here. And, you know, we had 50, 60 kids, the inner city kids. And for me, that's what it's all about. I love giving back to the game, you know, teaching our game. Our game is a great game. You know, obviously football and basketball has kind of surpassed us, you know, as far as grabbing the athletic youth. And, you know, that's part of my job is to try to give back to the game and get the young athlete back interested in baseball. So that's the candle that I try to carry.
Major League Baseball scout Orsino Hill, kind enough to give us some time tonight here on the Double with the Double S Express. We appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks, Orsino.
Absolutely. I appreciate you having me on anytime.
All right.
There goes Orsino Hill, Major League Baseball scout and former minor league baseball player.
Man, you know, definitely learned a lot from Orsino. Learned, you know, a lot about his, you know, his upbringing, a lot of what it takes to actually find out the prospect. And, man, his Dodgers, of course, man, just an update to him. Yeah, if you're still listening, 3-2, the Dodgers win over St. Louis. The hits keep going for the Dodgers.
All right, Sean, what do we got coming up for the rest of the show?
Well, coming back from the break, we have guest number two. That is Eric Williams, sports beat writer from the Tacoma News Tribune and the Seattle Seahawks. So keep it locked in. You're listening to the best sports talk.
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services, platinum service without the platinum price.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. It's time to bring in big-time guest number two, a return guest. Let's go out to Tacoma, Washington, and welcome in Eric Williams, Seahawk beat writer for the Tacoma News Tribune. Eric, thanks for joining us again tonight.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me, guys.
Hey, Eric, thanks for being on the show, man, once again. Of course, you know, you're there at training camp. Tell us what the vibe is right now in Seahawk land.
Well, it is a Pete Carroll camp, so it is excitement and enthusiasm. and a lot of high expectations, obviously, with all the talk about this team being one of the handful of teams that can compete for a Super Bowl. Obviously, they're dealing with the Percy Harvin situation, you know, with him having the hip surgery and likely being out for the majority of the season, at least until probably Thanksgiving, until they have their bye week. But they feel like they have enough juice on offense to continue to score points at a high level. You know, guys like Golden Tate, Sidney Rice, Doug Baldwin are going to have to fill the void there with Harvin gone. So certainly a lot of talk is about that. And then also the pass rush, you know, how they're going to put things together. Chris Clemens still on the PUP list. And Cliff Averill, you know, is set out for more than a week now with a hamstring issue and probably will not play in the exhibition opener at San Diego. So they're looking for guys like Mike Morgan has played a lot at the Leo position with both those guys out. Benson Mayoa has been a surprise contributor, undrafted rookie free agent out of the University of Idaho. And then O'Brien Schofield, a guy they picked off of waivers, claimed when Arizona Cardinals released him. It's a guy that Pete Carroll liked in the 2010 draft out of Wisconsin, was drafted in the fourth round by the Cardinals. He's another guy that has an opportunity to earn some playing time and possibly a roster spot if he plays well in the preseason.
So it sounds like the Seahawks have definitely drafted well. You had mentioned Clemens and Averill. These aren't major injuries at all for the Seahawks?
Well, no, Clemens is significant. He had ACL knee surgery in January, and so he's still rehabbing from that. It's about 7 months out. You know, traditionally it takes 9 months to a year to come back from that.
they're hoping that he can be ready to go to open the season, but I think more likely he's going to begin the season on the PUP list. So if you're without Clemens and then with the suspension that Bruce Irvin has to serve, you know, first four games for the PED violation, they're really looking for guys that can create pass rush off the edge. So they need Averill to come back healthy off the hamstring issue. And then they need guys like Michael Bennett. Mike Morgan might be a guy. They're looking for as many edge rushers as they can get to kind of keep things going until they can get Irvin and Clemens back.
Eric, an injury that's a bit concerning to me, and it almost seems like it's stemming from the last game with the Atlanta Falcons in the playoffs, is Zach Miller and his foot. Is this the same issue that the plantar issue he had back at during the playoffs?
Well, according to Carroll, it isn't, but it's kind of hard to believe that he has a similar foot injury that has nothing to do with the plantar fascia that he suffered against Atlanta in the playoff game. I think they're just kind of being conservative. They don't really need Zach to play right now, and they really need to give Luke Wilson, their fifth-round draft pick, as many reps as he can get. So he's playing a lot in practice. They also have second-year pro Sean McGrath getting a lot of time. He was an undrafted rookie free agent that finished the season on the active roster, and they like what he can do both as a run blocker and in the pass game. So I think the expectation is Zach Miller will be back for the third preseason game, which traditionally is kind of a dress rehearsal for the regular season. And so they're hopeful that this isn't going to be something that lingers through the regular season.
What is it that you're going to be looking for the first preseason game coming up Thursday against San Diego?
Well, I think both guard spots, you know, who's going to seize control of that competition? Left guard Paul McQuiston is the veteran that started most of last year at left guard, but they have James Carpenter coming off of arthroscopic knee surgery. They're hoping that he can finally play at his potential, a first-round pick by this team a couple years ago. And then at right guard, you have J.R. Sweezy, a converted defensive lineman that really came on for them as a rookie last year. And then John Moffitt, a third-round pick out of Wisconsin, that's kind of more of a technician that's there competing with Sweezy. So they really have to solidify those guard spots to make sure that they're able to run the ball like they want to. I'll be watching that. And then I think the backup quarterback position, obviously, you know, Russell Wilson is the man that's going to lead this team, but they have to figure out what's going to happen in that backup role. So I think Russell Wilson will get a series or two, and then we'll see a lot of Tavares Jackson and Brady Quinn as they try to figure out who's going to be backing up Russell.
For those of you just tuning in, we have Eric Williams, sports beat writer for the Tacoma News Tribune and the Seattle Seahawks. Eric, you had mentioned some of the injuries with the receivers. Of course, Percy Harvin, that is somewhat of a setback for the Seahawks, even though he has never stepped foot on the football field for the Hawks just yet. Sidney Rice went to Switzerland for knee work.
Yeah, I wish I could go to Switzerland.
Definitely. And so tell the listeners a little bit about that. What was the reasoning for going to Switzerland to get that opinion?
Yeah, it sounds like Sidney went to Switzerland to have some preventative procedure done. It was not surgery. It was similar to what other guys like Brian Urlacher and Kobe Bryant have done, kind of that cartilage regeneration. You know, they take your blood, spin it, and put it back in, and hopefully try to encourage some growth in the affected area. For Sidney Rice, that's his knee, and it's just something that he's been dealing with, you know, basically for the last couple years, really. He hasn't practiced a whole lot or didn't last year because of this knee. He's also a guy that had, you know, shoulder surgeries on both shoulders before last season. Played a full 16 games last year, which was the first time he's done that since 2009. So they're trying to get ahead of the curve in terms of the knee. He practiced fully today, looked fine, was running around. And I think it's something that they're hoping they'll see an effect in the next couple of weeks. It's not some kind of magic pill that you take.
Well, that definitely sounds good for Seahawks fans. Now, there's also a little bit of a battle on the other side of the football on the defensive end at the nickel position. So you have Thurman and Winfield. What's going on there?
Yeah, I mean, that's really something to keep an eye on as well. Thurman's balling right now. He's playing at a really high level. He's playing at the level that they expected him to be at when they initially drafted him a couple years ago. You know, he's a fourth-round pick out of University of Oregon, but he basically fell on the draft because he had ACL knee reconstructive surgery his senior season at the University of Oregon. And so right now you're kind of seeing him, what a fully healthy Walter Thurman can do. And he got reps with the first unit at cornerback, and Brandon Browner sat and watched for the majority of the practice today. So they're getting a good look at him at corner on the outside, and then they really like what he's able to do at nickel corner, which, you know, you wonder what they're going to do with Antoine if Thurman wins that job. You know, they basically gave Antoine $1 million in guaranteed money. So they could save about $500,000, if they cut him before week one. So I'm interested if they would do that. I don't think they would, just because, you know, Walter has had, you know, so much trouble staying healthy his first three seasons in the league, and Antoine really gives them a security blanket in case Walter does get injured. But they also have a lot of corners that could really start for other teams. You look at, you know, guys like Jeremy Lane, Byron Maxwell's another guy that's a pretty solid corner for them. They have a guy, Will Blackman, that played and was pretty effective for Green Bay, then had some injury issues and fell out of the league. He's now trying to make a roster, and he's looked pretty good. So there's a number of guys that are fighting for roster jobs there.
Eric Williams, Seattle Seahawks beat writer for the Tacoma News Tribune, joining us here on the Double with the Double S Express. And Eric, I'm curious, the Seahawks have signed a couple of former Arizona Cardinals recently, one of them being wide receiver Early Doucette. Do you think that has more to do with, hey, this guy can possibly help us and maybe make this roster? Or is a part of that, hey, guy, what's going on down there in Phoenix?
Well, I don't think those guys know a whole lot of what's going on down there, because you have a new regime with Bruce Arians. So they're basically putting in a new offense and a new defense. I think it's more, you know, they think those guys are tough-minded guys that might be able to help them and make the roster. You know, Early Doucette is a slot receiver, and, you know, you're going to be without Percy Harvin for a while. So you bring him in and see if he is an upgrade over, you know, some of the bottom-end guys you have competing for jobs as the fifth or sixth receiver. And I think with Schofield, again, you know, when you look at Chris Clemens and Cliff Averill being injured, you're trying to add as much depth there as you can. And they like Schofield because not only can he be an edge rusher for them, he can play a little bit of outside backer as well in that system that they run, which is a 4-3 system, but with 3-4 personnel. And obviously, Schofield's guy that played in a 3-4 system down in Arizona when Ray Horton was the defensive coordinator down there. So I just think it's more kind of adding the depth and trying to get the best 53 players on the roster that they can once they break camp.
For those of you just tuning in, we have Eric Williams, sports beat writer for the Tacoma News Tribune and the Seattle Seahawks. Hey, Eric, I just want you to take a deep breath right now, because we are getting ready to hit home on something that you really love and an organization that you really love. And we have a lot of listeners down in the Bay Area, down here in the Bay Area, who are diehard Oakland Raider fans. This is your chance to talk about the Oakland Raiders and some of the things that are going on. Have you been keeping up with them?
You know, I've been keeping up a little bit, and I have definitely some concerns about what's going to happen, just basically with the overall organization. You know, after what happened with the story that came out with Sports Illustrated, Jim Trotter writing a story that, you know, Mark Davis wasn't pleased with. He then goes and fires their head PR guy, and that's not a great sign. You wonder if Reggie McKenzie is going to get enough time to really finish the rebuilding effort there. You know, there's rumblings that, you know, Mark Davis believes that this team can win now. I think you and I both know that this team is not built to win right now. They need 2 or 3 years to kind of get out of the salary cap situation that McKenzie was given when he took over that roster and that organization. And they just need to get more talent. And so I hope that, you know, Mark Davis shows patience and allows Reggie to do his job, which is going to take 2 or 3 years to turn that thing around. In terms of the roster, it's really hard to find recognizable names on defense. You know, when you look at what they have overall, and I just think, you know, I think Matt Flynn's the guy right now. I don't know if he's the guy long term, but there's not a whole lot of playmakers around him. So I think 6-10 for the Raiders right now would be a good season.
Yeah, I think you're right as far as that record is concerned. I mean, you know, one of the things that Raider Nation is looking at is they just want some signs of improvement. I think from training camp thus far, there has been tremendous improvement as far as the cohesiveness. You were talking about familiarity on one side of the defense. Of course, you have Charles Woodson, who is back with the Raiders. And, of course, he is definitely implementing his knowledge and his wisdom with the secondary. You're talking about
Charles was 50 years old, isn't he?
Yeah.
Can he still play?
Yeah. You know, he could – from what it sounds like he's definitely doing his part. He's not there to just coach.
Okay.
But that remains to be seen. Of course, you have Tracy Porter coming over from the Denver Broncos. And, you know, and so there are some changes as far as their defensive backs are concerned. Nick Roach at the linebacker the middle
from
linebacker.
Chicago, right?
Yeah, from Chicago. And so it sounds like in camp those guys are definitely the nucleus of the defense. Now, of course, you know, Raider fans, let's not get too hasty as far as, you know, putting them into the postseason. But what we're hearing out of camp are definite positive signs. And, of course, on the offensive side, you're looking at, as you had mentioned, Matt Flynn. When it sounded like in the beginning that he was fighting for his life, for his job, and I think that's just, we as the media bringing that hype up, he's definitely looking the part.
Yeah, I think that was overblown.
You know, and so things are starting to gel a little bit. Of course, you know, the first step and the first key is to see what it all looks like this Friday as the Raiders take on the Dallas Cowboys. But,
I think that game's going to be interesting. I don't know if you watched Dallas in the Hall of Fame game against Miami, but I thought they looked pretty good. So I think it's going to be a pretty good test for them facing a pretty talented Dallas team. You didn't mention anybody on the offense and defensive line, and that's kind of the concern, I think, you know, for me with the Raiders. It all starts up front with the NFL. You know, if you have a good offensive line, a good defensive line, and a quarterback that can make plays, then you have a chance. But if you don't own the line of scrimmage up front, it's really hard to win games in the league.
Yeah, and that's definitely the key. And, you know, what it sounds like right now are that the Raiders are going with, you know, a lot of the pieces that they had last year. And, of course, you're looking at Valdir at the center position, and you're looking at Khalif Barnes that's fighting for his life as far as at right guard. And so, you know, there are some things that, of course, Tony Sperano is the offensive lines coach. That's added for the Raiders as far as experience is concerned. And having, yeah, you know, and so, you know, I believe that getting rid of that zone blocking scheme, which was huge, will be a strong testament and will allow Darren McFadden to actually get out and run. And, you know, if Darren can keep himself healthy, could be a good year for him.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head, though. Can he stay healthy? You know, whether it's zone, power, I mean, he's got to stay on the field. And he's got to make plays. You know, sometimes it's not the scheme. It's, you know, can the player make something happen regardless of what the play is called? So I'm interested to see, you know, can he make it through a full season and be effective?
Eric, do you think it's fair to say that down in Oakland they're attempting to take the blueprint page from the NFC West counterparts, the San Francisco 49ers, the Seattle Seahawks, and even, you know, what they're doing in St. Louis now in building their franchise from the front office, Reggie McKenzie having ties to Green Bay just like John Schneider does, and trying to get that cap right in order to be successful?
Yeah, I think that's fair in terms of how you build an organization. As you mentioned, you know, Reggie McKenzie is from Green Bay, so he's from the Ted Thompson tree. Obviously has a lot of experience with how Green Bay builds, and that's through the draft. And so that's what he's trying to do. Of course, you need draft picks to do that. So he was a little hampered the first couple of years he was there. You know, I have some concern with who he drafted in the first round with the kid out of Houston, cornerback, that had the heart condition. I just seem like an unnecessary risk. Like there were other players that could have added more immediate help, particularly on the defensive line. So that kind of raised a red flag for me, that selection. I like the other picks that he made in the draft, though. I thought they were pretty solid. But, you know, you have to give whoever is putting that team together time, and you have to be patient. And, again, I just have concern about, you know, you can't keep turning over the heads of organization every couple of years, you're not going to get any consistency or stability. And I would like to see that happen.
Eric Williams, thanks so much for your insight on the Seattle Seahawks that you cover for the Tacoma News Tribune and your favorite team, the Oakland Raiders. Appreciate your time tonight.
Thanks, Eric.
Okay. Thanks, man. I appreciate it, guys. You have a good one.
All right. You too.
There goes Eric Williams, beat writer for the Tacoma News Tribune, covering the Seattle Seahawks and big fairs.
Yeah, you know, and of course, it's always good to have Eric on and, you know, talking Seahawks football and Raiders football. And, you know, he was mentioning one of the things as far as DJ Hayden, the first-round corner that was picked out of Houston. You know, all things out of training camp sound like this guy is going to be special. And so right now, even though he hasn't had the chance, he's got a red jersey on because, you know, the Raiders are taking some caution. But what he's doing as far as coverage is concerned is nothing short of amazing from what I'm hearing. And so I expect some great things to happen from him.
Likes the inconvenience of car repairs. Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services. Platinum service without the platinum price.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express, Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. Lucky number 13 in the book, Sean. It's been a good show.
Yeah, great show having Orsino Hill, a Major League Baseball scout for the Los Angeles Dodgers on the show, given a chance to tell some of the ins and outs on what it takes to actually get to the next level. And I love having the scouts on the show. Having Orsino getting a chance to talk about one of his, you know, his upbringings as far as how he got into the majors, talking about Harvard Park. And, you know, so that was great. And, you know, just talking a little bit about how PEDs play a role in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, it's always great to hear what they're thinking and what their mindset is when they go check out a prospect. And it was good to hear that they have to look at the entire ball of wax and not just, oh, man, this guy's so talented, we have to choose him. But no, there's his makeup, his background, his grades, all that goes into the whole pot.
Yeah, and like Orsino said, even the type of color underwear that he wears. So, I mean, there's major detail into finding out top prospects.
And then our second guest was Eric Williams, writer for the Tacoma News Tribune, Seahawks Insider blog. And he was our first guest on show number one, back for show number 13, talking Seahawks. And we got in some Raider talk, his favorite team.
Yeah, definitely. His team and mine, the Oakland Raiders. But, you know, it was great to find out what's going on with the Seahawks and how they're developing going into the season. Of course, they have a game coming up. I believe it's this Thursday. Am I correct, Sean?
Correct. San Diego.
Okay, so they have San Diego this Thursday. We'll get a chance to see, you know, Russell Wilson probably one or two series, maybe a couple of snaps, you know, just trying to keep him healthy. But after that, the Seahawks fans will get a chance to see, you know, what their up-and-comings look like and how they're adding to an already great roster. As far as the Oakland Raiders are concerned, we've talked about this on numerous occasions. Hey, these are just building years, and they're just stacking player on top of player. But to be honest with you, as someone who is following the Oakland Raiders. I am definitely impressed in the direction that the Raiders are going. Again, talking about DJ Hayden, some have questions on him as far as him being the first pick. I do not. I believe that DJ Hayden is definitely going to be a superstar in the NFL. Of course, adding Josh Cribbs, special teams extraordinaire, that was a big, major hole to fill for the Oakland Raiders. The Oakland Raiders last year always started deep in their own territory, and they never, you know, won the field possession battle. But this year, having someone like Josh Cribbs that plays both sides of the ball, who's a hard hitter and who can run it back, this should make it a lot easier for Matt Flynn to play the short game up and down the field. So, you know, are they going to do some great things? No. But will they be a better team than they were the past couple of years? You better believe it, and definitely get excited for that, Raider fans.
And the beauty of August is every team has the same record. Every team thinks they're going to the Super Bowl.
Well, from last night, I hope the Miami Dolphins do not believe that they're going to the Super Bowl. But, you know, hey, you're right. You know, from kickoff or Hall of Fame weekend, there are visions of grandeur for all 32 teams in the NFL. And, hey, let's face it, by week three, some of us will be looking forward to next year, but that's okay. You know, it's going to be a great season nonetheless. You know, and again, I've been saying the NFC West and the whole NFC in its entirety should be a great, great watch this year.
Well, Sean, I would be remiss if I did not say happy birthday to my mother, Kathy Wally. Probably listening out there in internet radio land. Happy birthday, Mom.
Happy birthday, Mother Wally. Thank you for listening on the show. And, you know, hey, we're doing some great things here, and your son is doing some awesome stuff. Proud of you. Hope you're having a great day, and we'll talk to you soon.
And definitely, as we mentioned, the beginning of the show, big weekend in Seattle for Mariner fans, especially those of us that lived the early, mid, and late 90s in and around the Pacific Northwest. Ken Griffey Jr. enshrined into the Seattle Mariner Hall of Fame on Saturday. I will be at Safeco Field. Look for some On the Double reports next week, and we'll also recap it on next week's show.
Yeah, so I look forward to you doing some interviews and definitely recording the PA announcer calling out Ken Griffey Jr.'s name. I miss hearing that. That is always great, and it brings back some fond, great memories.
Tom Hutler does a great job at Safeco Field, and that will definitely be a call we will never forget, and we will hear on Saturday evening from Safeco Field in Seattle.
You bet. And, of course, you know, don't forget the Bay Area fans and Northern California fans. Oakland A's are in a drive, so make sure that you are getting out to those ball games there and supporting on those amazing A's.
That's the voice of Sean Boyd in Sacramento, California. I'm Sean Wally, Tri-Cities, Washington, on the Double, show number 13 in the books. We will talk to you again next Monday for show 14 right here on the Double with the Double S Express.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for some more great sports talk and big-time guests on the Double with the Double S Express.